locations first. In terms of the release locations, they will be in the rabbit hotspots. So the Manuherikia is definitely in that list. That's what I refer to as the Alexandra area. On the funding, the $50,000, we understand there is a limited number of doses available to New Zealand, and the indications are that Otago may get about 30%, which is a big share of the limited number. So the funding has been worked out on that assumption that we get around about 100 doses for Otago, and we've worked out what it would cost to prepare to import, pay for the virus, prepare the bait, and distribute it, and that's based on the 100 doses. Certainly, if there were an opportunity to secure more doses for Otago, that's something we'd strongly pursue. But the numbers have been worked out on that 100 doses. So, at the moment, it's unclear how many will be available to New Zealand as a whole. But the indications are that around about 300 will come into New Zealand, and we'll get a third of that.
So you're comfortable with the 50,000 at this point, Mr. McLean?
Through the chair, yes. Based on that 100 doses, but as I said, certainly if there were more available, we would pursue that.
Yeah, that's the question, I guess, through you, Mr. Chairman, that I'm just concerned about, that if that availability of those extra doses are there, we need the money to be able to purchase those doses, and we don't want to say, well, we ain't got any money, because that leaves egg on our face. So we don't have to spend $100,000, but if it was allocated, we know it's there, and if there's more doses, you know, that are available, that's great. We can pop by them. That's what I would like this debate to consider today.
Or is it just a situation we could change the recommendation, or we could, well, I think the CE's listening, and I think he's if that opportunity comes, it sounds like from what Mr. McLean's saying, is it will certainly be considered and potentially pursued. Is that correct, Mr. Baker?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the council, we've got an up to, if the council up to 50,000, so it's not. It'll only be spent if it's required. Council may want to change that number. The end result allows us a bit more free board without, maybe we can make some decisions a little quicker. So happy to support that if that was the will of the meeting.
Okay. So there'll be other discussion. Councillor Laws.
I've got a number of issues or questions around this issue. I think the first one is I want to know where we are exactly with the approval mechanism. What is the process? I mean, there's no update on basically this report from 2 months ago. So I want to know, what is the logjam that is stopping this approval of this virus being released into New Zealand? So can I get some indication on that one first, please?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some various tech boxes that need to be checked. Mr. McLean?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. We don't have an update from the last meeting. We will get that. There's a meeting of the Rabbit Coordination Group on the 16th of February, where MPI will update on behalf of the EPA the group as to where the approval process is at. With regards to the process, it's with the Environmental Protection Agency. It's a biological control tool. So they're doing due diligence prior to approving it to ensure that it's appropriate to import and release. So it's a complex process, but it is a biological control tool, and that due diligence is necessary from the EPA's point of view.
Okay, well, the second issue is, why are there only 100 doses?
Through the chair, there are the manufacturer. That's all indications are that's all they can produce. Bearing in mind that it's being manufactured in Australia, and there's a big release program in Australia also. So the scientists that are part of the Rabbit Coordination Group believe that 300 doses will be sufficient to kickstart a series of epidemics in the country. But certainly, as I pointed out, if there are more available, then we would be pursuing a higher number.
Sorry, did I see you say 300?
300 for New Zealand.
New Zealand.
And 100 for Otago.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just jump in the Council of Laws? Like, in terms of the report, it's saying that the effectiveness would be somewhere between 0 and 40%. I mean, this K5 is not a silver bullet. I mean, if you brought 1,000 of these in, does that percentage go up? Or basically, it's not a silver bullet?
No. The increasing the number of doses won't increase the efficacy of the virus.
Yeah.
And we won't know how effective it is until it's released. It's a virus, and viruses behave differently in different climates, different conditions. So there's been a lot of science go into it, and Australia are about to embark. So we should be able to get a general idea of how it's going in Australia, but bearing in mind that our conditions are quite different.
Why are we asking for $50,000 now, when this isn't planned to be released until September of this year? So you've got an annual plan process coming up that we are considering now. What's the budget? What's the $50,000 for? Why isn't it in the annual plan for 2017-18?
Through the chair, no, that's not quite correct. It's if we get the statutory approval required, it'll be released in autumn, which is prior to the next financial year. Yes, so there is a window available. If we don't get the statutory approval in time, there'll be a window of opportunity late winter and spring, which will be the new financial year, and it will be budgeted for through the annual plan process. But we didn't want to be given the statutory approval and not having brought it to council in order to make that expenditure available. But it's been a long and complex process, and the end date hasn't been that certain, and there's still a little bit of uncertainty around that.
Yes, which is why I said the September, because my understanding is that this has been so delayed that autumn is an extraordinarily ambitious target, shall we say. But I'll leave that for now. The next issue is the Otago Regional Council seems to put a lot of its eggs into this basket with regards to rabbit control. There has been an explosion of rabbits over the last two seasons, which has certainly been noticed in central Otago and the lakes and the Dunstan region, and is having a deleterious effect upon a number of issues up there. I am concerned, is there any further funding or any further action apart from the status quo and this that the Otago Regional Council is planning to combat the exploding rabbit numbers in central Otago and the Dunstan region?
Well, we certainly have an upcoming review of the pest management strategy. I'm sure that rabbits will be key part of that.
Mr. Chairman, the current pest management, regional pest management plan indicates that all property occupiers are responsible for undertaking rabbit control on their properties. So it's not the job of the Otago Regional Council to carry out that control. Ours is a regulatory position. But as the Chairman just mentioned, the pest plan is up for review next financial year, and that'll be an opportunity for the Council and the community to think about how rabbit control is delivered in the region and make some decisions around change if that's what's desired.
Can I explore that issue, because this is the central issue to me? My understanding is that the Otago Regional Council has statutory responsibility for pest management and control within the region. What you're suggesting to me is that they have devolved this responsibility, or this organisation has, to landowners to do it as part of the policy of the Otago Regional Council. Is that correct?
Anybody want to comment on that? Councillor Woodhead, going back to the rabbit boards and so forth?
No, I'm talking about the law now.
Any comment on that?
Happy to. We've had this discussion before, Mr. Chairman. Council hasn't devolved its responsibility under the Biosecurity Act. We are responsible for putting in place a pest plan, and well, I think it was a pest strategy formerly. It's going to be a pest plan in the future. And the community decided that they will take responsibility for rabbits. And as Mr. McLean's outlined, we have a monitoring role.
Sorry, Steve, can I ask through the chairman? Sorry, the community didn't. I imagine the Otago Regional Council made its policy decision on that, but the statutory responsibility rests still upon the Otago Regional Council under the Biosecurity Act. Is that not true?
Mr. Chairman?
Any comment, Councillor Woodhead?
Yeah, no, that's in my understanding, that's an incorrect interpretation. Our responsibility is to put in place a pest plan, and it identifies pests and how we're going to control them. There's a whole raft of controls in the Biosecurity Act policies in there that outlines how we're to work through the process of deciding as a community how we're going to control pests, which ones we're going to control, etc. And in Otago's case, I think it was a long time before any of the current councillors were involved, but landholders decided to take, it was agreed with the community, that landholders take responsibility for controlling rabbits. That was part of the process when the subsidies, government subsidies for pest control that underpin the activities of rabbit boards were withdrawn. And the community had the discussion how we're going to deal with this issue and decided to take responsibility themselves. And we've reviewed a number of times over the years the pest plan, and there's been changes in the case of rabbits in the limits. And some communities have reacted by working together, such as the Manitoto Pest Company, and other landholders are responsible on individual basis. So, under the current plan, it's individual landholders' responsibility to control rabbits to the levels that are set in our Otago pest plan.
If that level isn't actually achieved, if that appropriate MAL is not achieved, then the OSC has the responsibility to either prosecute or previously would put in its own contracting services to address that matter, Mr. McLean.
Mr. Chairman, there are enforcement mechanisms, and that does include right through to potential prosecution and undertaking work under default.
Yeah, so the community has the responsibility to deliver it, but the ORC has the responsibility to administer it. Absolutely. And to make these people accountable, the community accountable, yeah?
That's correct. It's quite a long process outlined in the current pest management plan, one that allows essentially non-compliance for around about 3 years. So property owners must submit a property plan when they're found to be non-compliant, outlining how they will achieve compliance in year one and maintain compliance for 2 years following. So.
And regardless of where the finger's pointed, I suspect we need to do rabbits better. The community, the ORC, and that's why there's going to be some challenges in this next round of the pest management plan, in relation to rabbits, because results are mixed and there are issues, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. I see the challenges as opportunities to actually think outside the square and look at all options and put them out to the community and certainly engage the community to see how they feel and what they want to see with regards to rabbit regulation and control.
It's a
real opportunity to actually make a difference.
Yeah, and is it fair to say that the status quo needs to be improved?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so I think we're all in agreement there. Councillor Kempton.
One of the things I think is really important that needs to be underlined, and there may be a communications element to this, is that it's all very well saying we're not doing enough around rabbits and and is supporting the release of K5 or whatever it is, maybe isn't enough. What's really, really important about this, when the Khaleesi virus was released, it was quite chaotic. Other people will know better than me the ins and outs of that. But the science behind its effectiveness, the chance to develop a real understanding of its effectiveness and how it might be applied to maximise its effectiveness, was lost because of that. There was no opportunity to do that. And so the ability of us to, for us to manage that so that it was more effective for longer,
yeah,
was gone.
Yeah, we lost some efficiency.
That's right. Now, in this case, what's really important is that we have to have the patience to be able to release this without rushing off and doing other things at the same time, so that we actually come to understand in the control areas, which when I looked through them, I thought they were probably pretty well chosen in terms of where the problems are, so that in those control areas we can actually gain a lot of information that may well mean that that investment and further investments are really, really, the potential of those investments is maximised. And so I think that we've just got to be really careful about it. I agree that we should be at the front of the queue. I have one question, which is it possible, or rather, for private interests to buy this virus and then release the virus in parallel with us, but possibly without the monitoring and the controls around the effectiveness of it?
Mr. McLean.
In order to import the virus, you must hold that statutory approval. A private individual could not go out and just purchase the virus off the manufacturer. But of course, there is the risk, which we saw in the 90s, with the illegal importation and the uncontrolled release of the virus. So the virus will be in Australia, and if it's not brought in a controlled manner, it will reach these shores in an uncontrolled manner.
So, but that structure's in place. That was really the question I was asking.
Structures in place. So I've had some hands in there. I've got Councillor Wood here. Did I see Councillor Brown?
Yeah.
And then Councillor Robinson.
Mr. Chairman, I just a couple of good articles in today's paper and around this issue. But I think we just need to reassure the community around the need to have a controlled release, as Mr. McLean has just. And the fact that it's been done in a professional way with the correct sites identified around the region. And we just need to be patient. Somebody else has already used that word. And allow nature after that to do its bit. And I know as a landowner in South Otago, it swept through our area after the first release. How it got there, I've no idea. But it's absolutely crucial that we get this managed in a professional and coordinated way. It's not just a case of putting some carrot out there. You know, the bait's got to be picked up, the time frames, there's a whole range of things to ensure we make the most of this opportunity. The other aspect I'd like to comment on, and I think it's a question for our communication staff, alongside Mr. McLean, is to ensure we ramp up some communications, reminding community that this is one tool in a basket. So you can't rely on it. It might, in some cases, decimate some populations of rabbits, but actually, you should be night shooting, you should be dogging and trapping, you should be etc., etc. And it's not the panacea, and it's not silver bullet, and we've seen it in the past where rabbit numbers across the region were decimated quite dramatically with the release of the first virus. But look where we are again today, and they've just slowly been building immunity and the population's been building up. Interestingly, this is a whole of regional issue. There are high numbers of rabbits all through Otago. It's not just a dry land issue, it's certainly down the coastal strip. At the health and safety briefing at Waitangi Day at Otakao Marae on Monday, we were warned to be careful of rabbit holes when walking around the grounds. Right. So Peninsula's got some really bad spots. But
that's one of the spots to be released. The
correct.
Spots,
correct. So I just wanted to reassure that it's actually a regional issue. And I just think we need to reassure the community that this is being managed in a professional way across the whole region. And because I've been getting phone calls, everybody, I think, and Council Bell clearly, can I have some too sort of stuff. We cannot have the behaviour that occurred last time. It needs to be controlled and managed in a professional way.
Control, patience. Thank you. Councillor Brown.
Yeah, look, I was just going to say what the previous two speakers have said. You know, this is a one-off opportunity again to really have an effect on the rabbit populations. And so time and time again, we've talked to the landowners out there about follow-up work and all that. And as I say, we're back where we are now. And I know in North Otago, it is very bad in some areas. So, I think we probably need to engage the communities. There's a thousand experts out there about rabbits. We probably need to engage the communities to some agree and just see what they think about the most effective way of doing this and ensuring its potency as long-lasting as possible.
Okay, so thank you. I'm going to go to Mr. Bodig, and then we're going to Councillor Robinson, and then Councillor Lawton may have missed out. My periphery vision is not as good as it should be. Mr. Baedeker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Council needs to be aware that the EPA has yet to decide. I don't think we should for one moment assume that they will. I have no reason other than it's taking a long time. They have a process, and it's not for me to comment on their process. But I don't think this thing is a done deal, and the discussion that I'm having with my directors is, should they not release it for our use, what advice might we give to farmers who may think it appropriate to import it illegally? I think we have to be realistic with the innovativeness of farmers and observe their past behaviours. So while we would never condone any illegal importation of a new organism into this country, if it did arrive, how might it best be used? Because I know last time when it came in illegally, it came in at the wrong time of the year, and it was even less effective than it may have been. So I think we have to be prepared for that. EPA may not get the timeframes that we would all like.
Absolutely right.
Okay, so that's interesting. That's a bit of a reality check there too. Councillor Robinson.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same as everyone else. Really, it's just the key message of don't do it yourself. Number two, don't rely on it as a silver bullet. Still going to need to do some work after that. But the third one is don't just wait for the pest plan changes as well, because I guess that's another unknown hanging out there of perhaps there'll be a silver bullet in there somewhere, so we'll just wait around as well. So that's the other thing to think about. But also, I was wanting to revisit Councillor Bell's question about the actual recommendation, which is that we approve up to $50,000, and I just want to check that that is the ultimate, I suppose. So we don't want to come back to a special meeting finding that actually we would like to approve more than that and we're limited. $50,000 sounds like a reasonable, fairly minor amount of money, but it might be just the right amount of virus to spread around the region in a good, technical, robust manner. I don't know. Or is it what Councillor Bell suggests, that more would be better?
Okay, well, maybe let's put, before, were you going to speak on this particular,
yeah.
On the Councillor Lawton as well, then we'll come back to that. Sorry, Councillor Lawton's been waiting.
Well, there's just a couple of points that stand out for me, and I think one of them is that, the community retakes responsibility and the community then don't actually do what they have said that they will do. It seems to me that whole process of follow-up and enforcement, if you like, it's a bit unclear to me, when it steps in and does the community actually realise that they have the responsibility to do it? It's not just, okay, we'll, you know, we'll do it. Because we've got problems out there with rabbits, and that obviously is something's not working. If the community are taking responsibility, well then maybe they're not doing the job they should do throughout the region. I mean, you can't really keep rabbits in one little spatial area if they're going to be sort of an explosion of rabbits in one area, they're going to be coming across the region.
Yeah.
So yes, so I'm a bit concerned about the enforcement side, and that comes back to regional councils' statutory responsibility. I mean, yeah, you can't just hand it over to the community unless the community is actually going to do what needs to be done. And the other thing is, I guess, on the new strain coming in, I'm not getting the impression that the communication with MPI and the EPA is as good as it could be. I mean, I would be expecting to be kept fully in the loop in terms of the timing, where any research is at, trials. Does the Otago Regional Council have its own liaison with the scientists who are involved in doing some of the background due diligence work on the virus? So just a question for you.
Okay, no, thank you. So I think Mr. Burns already responded to that there's a meeting coming up, but I think the point's taken that, you know, is to have that ongoing dialogue. In relation to the rabbits and the performance of this council, we have got one of the next reports, and I'll read out what it basically says. And it says inspections for rabbits have continued over the period in conjunction with audits of rabbit control plans. 27 properties have been inspected in Central Otago with 6 non-compliant. We have observed the usual annual increase in rabbit numbers due to a good breeding season. This has resulted in a number of complaints, mostly peri-urban based. These complaints have been responded to, and where required, landowners have been requested to provide rabbit control plans. It should also be noted the majority of these complaints fall under the nuisance banner, where rabbit numbers do not trigger or exceed the pest management plan limits. In such instances, staff provide information on rabbit control options to landowners. Mr. McLean? Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to provide a... I mean, that's what one of the following reports basically says. So, like, we're all busy sort of pointing the finger, whereas, in fact, that's what's going on. And is there any other comment that needs to be made? Maybe that will come out in that plan, but in that report...
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The only comment I'd make is we have to follow the process that's outlined in the current pest management plan, which is, if non-compliance is found initially, that property occupier has 3 months to submit a control plan, which identifies their control methodology over the following 3 years. The window of opportunity for primary control, so that's poisoning, is very limited. It's generally in the dead of winter. So when you undertake compliance inspections either late winter or early summer, realistically, that primary control is not going to be able to be done until the following winter. That's based on best practice. So that actually allows for quite a bit of time for non-compliance. Now, if the neighbouring property is compliant and level 3 allows for a number of rabbits, if they're compliant, chances are by the following spring and summer they'll be non-compliant or be invaded by the neighbouring property, who can't undertake their primary control until winter. So that's the way the pest management plan has been set up, and we have to follow that process. That's why the review of the pest management plan is a real opportunity to reflect on the last 10 years and look at other ways to achieve rabbit compliance and rabbit control in Otago.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McLean. I think we've chewed this one over a bit. The two of us, we've talked about, you know, the format of some of these reports and whether, you know, particular issues actually need to be brought to this committee with some type of background, just a little bit more of an in-depth analysis. You know, do you envisage, like, a report coming to this committee at some point about rabbits, just with a little bit more depth, creating a context, you know, for the pest management plan review so that
we can maybe take, you know, we can critique the strengths and the weaknesses of the past and provide a platform for improvements in the future. A report, could you foresee a report like that coming to this committee?
Yes, certainly I could prepare a report, but I think perhaps it's an opportunity for the newly established reference groups to sink their teeth into, and perhaps a report come out of that once we've had an initial meeting, because certainly reflecting on the plan that we've had in place for a number of years will be key.
Yeah, so we need that information, whether it comes to our reference groups or whatever. I see Councillor Noon was nodding his head, he's chair of that reference group, that he was comfortable with that. Councillor Beattie had his hand in the air.
I just wanted to make the point that the more I reflect on the position or the posture of the council on rabbits, it was probably much more appropriate when Central Otago in particular was pretty much farmed by a small number of relatively large landowners, the big runs. With them we could negotiate the kind of agreements that Mr. McLean's talking about in terms of their rabbit control and the time they had to do it. But now you look at the Central Otago landscape and it's increasingly horticultural, viticultural, lifestyle blocks. The whole dynamic has changed. Okay. Absentee owners all over the place.
Okay. I mean,
when you have that kind of land ownership in a rabbit-prone area, the kind of controls that we've expected people to exercise become less and less realistic. And I hope that the review that Mr. McLean's talking about, and particularly the pest management review as a whole, takes that into account as a big factor.
Okay. Thank you. So that'll come out in a report like that. Though Councillor Woodhead has also sort of reaffirmed that it is a regional issue. It's not all about Central Otago, it's all about Peninsula just over there. And they all have their own dynamics. Anyway, let's move. I think we've turned this one over and up. We've got a recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, can I move an amendment to the motion?
You most certainly can.
And that is to remove the words of up to $50,000 from this motion. That would then deal with the issue, and that reserve funding is approved for the coordinated release, and that's the way that the motion should read. And then that will deal with whether or not we've got adequate money. It's ludicrous to impose an arbitrary sum.
Oh, I wouldn't say it was necessarily ludicrous, because people will be jumping up and down with some gigantic $500,000 spent. Do we have a seconder?
Yep.
Any discussion on this recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I'm opposed to this. You just can't have an open-ended thing like this. What say it's going to cost $1 million? We're just going to spend $1 million without consideration coming back to here? This is why we have processes through the annual plan and the likes, and why we have special papers come to this council. I just think it's inappropriate to do that.
Okay, any other discussion, Councillor Kempton?
Agree with that entirely. There's no reason why, at this point, staff cannot be expected to put together a reasonable budget for something like this, and you will have done that with some, that will be an informed process that you've done. And I think that there's a thin end of the wedge here. I entirely agree with
Okay, so we've got an amendment to the recommendation. Do you want to speak to that amendment before I put it?
I certainly do. The reserve funding is approved. I mean, you could even add in that a budget be provided when required to this particular motion. But at the moment, the $50,000 is arbitrary. I think we need to get away from trying to impose limits upon what it's going to cost. We don't know. I have huge reservations, and I share the concerns of Mr. Bodeker based on some conversations I've had in the last couple of months about whether this is actually even going to happen. But I do think that what we need to do is trust our executive staff to draw up the budget when it's required and present that budget after the decision has been made. At the moment, we're still dealing in the never-never. The decision hasn't been made yet. So let's the decision be made, the motion allows the decision be made, approval, in principle, the funding to be approved out of reserves, and when that, and I would then add the words, and that a budget be provided as required, added to this particular motion. And that then deals, Doug, with your problem, and then it takes away the necessity for trying to guess what the cost of this plan is going to be, because that's what we're doing.
Okay, so Councillor Rawls has spoken to the amendment. My personal view is that that staff have actually put their mind to this particular matter and have come up with a rough figure of 50 grand, and the CEO has the discretion to exceed that if necessary. But nevertheless, is it relevant to this amendment, Councillor Woodhead?
Yes, and so the staff, this isn't a figure plucked out of the air.
No.
There's been some work done to justify the 50,000.
It's the cost of the virus, 2 pre-feed carried application, 1 treed carried application.
And there's an element of day-to-day operations, and it will have already been in the budget. So I have some concerns about
that. Okay, so the amendment is to basically remove the words, the reference to the 50,000. We've got a move, we've got a second, I'm going to put the motion.
That's the question before you put motion.
Yes, you can, Councillor.
Thank you.
So you're making a point.
Mr. Bodithi, your discretion to increase, if required, the 50,000 goes up to what level, so we understand?
Zero.
Well, I haven't got any discretion over this matter. I've only got discretion within the annual plan, so that's why we bring it here, so that there is a record of...
You have your own CEO.
Oh, no, not for unbudgeted activity. The discretion I would have was to reallocate funds. So, but then, you know, then we don't do what we said we were going to do in the annual plan. So I don't have any discretion.
I asked that question simply because the chair referred to your discretion.
Okay, I apologise for that. I apologise. Well made, Councillor Noon.
Can I read the motion again?
I think the motion, quite simply, is just removing the reference to up to 50,000, so it's that reserve funding be approved for the coordinated release.
And with the words, and that a budget be provided.
And that a budget be provided.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question of the mover of that amended motion? So does then the budget get approved by this council? Because that's what we're trying to do is be humble. So we spend it up to whatever the amount is and then provide you with an account for what we've done.
Yes, that's right. And can I also say, the EPA may impose a significant number of qualifications upon this that is going to change the thoughts process that currently applies in the Otago region.
I don't know exactly what's going to be available.
The aim of this then is to allow that process to occur, but then to account for those budgetary changes. I'm scared that we'll be back discussing this issue if the EPA come back to limitations that see that budget of $50,000 exceed.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Councillor Mr. McLean, do you think in relation to that budget of $50,000, is there, when the EPA come back, do you think that could trigger some issues?
Through the chair, potentially. We haven't had an answer from the EPA, so they may impose restrictions. That's an unknown, so that's a valid point.
Okay. Right, that's interesting. What about the other option? We do have an amendment here. What about the other option of having a limit of 100, like Councillor Bell kicked off?
Well, it might not be, through you, Mr. Chairman, it may not be 100, it might be 75. What I'm trying to say is that I don't think 100,000 is a lot of money in this particular issue. And it's not saying that 100,000 is ever going to be spent. It might be $51,000. What I don't want is to say that, I'm sorry, Bannockburn, we know you've got a problem, but we've run out of funding to be able to do the Bannockburn area. I want that flexibility there. And to do that, does that mean I have to have a dollarage figure there, or do we leave a visible, invisible figure and it's whatever? But it could be up to whatever limit. I don't know. But
okay.
You need to know that they can do what they need to do to make it happen.
Okay, and that is the intent. I think Councillor Law's motion with the budget be provided at some point, though there is the concern, of course, as Councillor Brown has articulated,
and others. I'll put the motion. Those four.
Four. Aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The motion is lost. The amendment is lost. Does anybody want to...
I'll move the recommendation as it's worded, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have a move. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Kempton, any further discussion? If not, I'll put the motion, put the recommendation as read. Those for?
Aye.
Aye.
Against?
No. Aye.
Carried. Okay, thank you for that discussion. And I mean, the minutes are all there in black and white. I think it's fair to say that the general and agreed intent of this council committee is to support the K5, and there will be changes in due course. Challenges.
Can I ask a question connected with this? What's the point of clarification?
Point of clarification. I'll give you that liberty.
All the stats that I've read coming out of MPI and Landcare research and things like that say that it's up to 30% effective. Where did the 40 come from?
Through the chair, that was come out of the last rabbit coordination group, of which Landcare are a member. So that's best case scenario.
Because they're public pronouncements, just so that you're aware, and if you go on the website, I've just checked again, they're saying that it's up to 30%. And I want to reiterate that, because it is just nowhere near going to be a solution.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in there and conclude this discussion. I think we said right at the outset it wasn't necessarily going to be a silver bullet. We've had a good discussion, we've got a good conclusion. I'm going to move on to the next report. Thank you. The next report is the Biosecurity and RMA Monitoring Report, 5th of November to 20th of January. And in this, it relates to water quality and quantity. The first point, the water and resource consent monitoring. You'll see in there, for example, that there is 9 grade 5 non-compliance, which I think principally was 2 septic tanks and some data in relation to water takes. And maybe some questions in relation to that. There's the water metering, and as discussed, a geographic information has been provided to a number of councils. We'll come back to, I think, the next report possibly. So the water metering, there's the pest management strategy implementation. I think we've talked about rabbits. To a reasonable degree, wallabies, rooks, plant pests, onions, bed, and so forth. I was very pleased to read in the under the public inquiries and the check clean dry program that 2 freshwater pest advocates were employed over the summer holiday break in the joint ORC MPI campaign. And I think that was something that Councillor Deacon promoted. It was great to get that immediate response. Thank you. Contaminated sites, there's some new information there. Environmental incidents, there it is. The recommendation at the bottom is report be noted. I'll open up this up to discussion.
This is to do with all issues, not just pests, isn't it, Mr. Chair?
This here is in relation to biosecurity and RMA reporting, so it kicks off with water quality and quantity, for example.
So that's the question I want to ask. Peter, the issue that I raised prior to Christmas with you to do in the Lauder area, or the Lauder area.
The Lauder area. The Lauder area is central to Targo.
There we go. The issue there is, how does that get recorded in here? So, for example, just to explain to my colleagues, there was a complaint of illegal water take. Where would that get recorded in this, and how does one follow that through?
So if the complaint results in an enforcement action, it's recorded then.
Is the complaint itself noted?
Not to council. That's an internal thing, and so it's the enforcement action as a result of a complaint that's noted to council.
Okay. So this is the next thing that I'm going to ask as a new councillor. If I get a complaint from a constituent, Brian,
yes.
This is a good example of an illegal water take, and I follow that complaint up with the chief executive in the Otago Regional Council. Does a report come back to me about how that was resolved. For the purposes of reporting back to my constituents.
Mr. Bailey.
Well, the constituents involved, and you inform me of a complaint. The constituent had done the same. And in the case of the one that you raised, it was a long-standing dispute between neighbours. So we've investigated it and continue to investigate it again. And what has resulted from that, I won't say the complaint, but what's resulted from that activity is that there's been a request to review consents. So that's continuing. Now, whether a councillor wishes to have an update of that, I'm not sure, but I mean, management is dealing with that issue as we would if we just received the complaint directly from the complainant.
No, but the issue that I'm asking is, and Stephen, this involves you as a chairman.
As a councillor, you get feedback.
Exactly, because I, it seems to me that if I get a complaint from a constituent and you follow it up on your behalf, that it's just good practice to inform the councillor of what the progress to date is along that issue.
That sounds a reasonable request.
And I was wondering if we have a policy to that effect or not at the moment.
I hear some words.
Through the chair, whenever we receive a complaint, we ask the complainant, would you like to be informed of the outcome? Often they'll say no, but often they'll say yes. So we do have a process. And once it's resolved, we will inform the complainant how it was resolved. In terms of an ongoing investigation, it's exactly that, and the details can't be discussed in a public forum until it's resolved.
With respect, I think this example is the councillor is not the complainant. The councillor is possibly the facilitator, councillor Laws.
Well, it's the constituency representative of them. Yes, that's right. So what I'm saying is in many territorial authorities, but I'm not speaking for them all, if a councillor took up a complaint on behalf of the constituent and said, right, this is happening, there would be an ongoing report to that councillor saying, well, this is what we've done. And I'm just trying to see if that's the process that is followed here or not.
Well, we don't, to answer through you, Mr. Chairman, to answer that, no, we don't have a policy to that end. Councillors, in the time I've been here, have said, this is what I've received. And in some cases where there's no legal action taken, or you know, which in this case there is, sometimes the councillors have been involved. Sometimes the councillors are present at an inspection or a visit. But in this case, it is deeply entrenched in lawyers are talking to lawyers, and it's my opinion. Based on advice that I've taken from other councillors, that's not good for external people to be involved in.
Yeah, but as an elected representative of with the constituent who approaches you, surely I'm not asking you to take sides or influence the decision of the regional council, but surely it's good practice to inform a councillor as to what that progress is in a formal procedure.
Yep. Well, if councillors wish to be advised at an appropriate interval, there's no reason not to do that. It's an activity that we will begin to undertake. It's resource required, but we will do it if that's the will of the meeting.
Well, I might jump in there, and I know Councillor Woodhead's got his hand in there. This particular issue is a sensitive issue. One needs to, tread with care. So in this particular example, and can't remember the detail of the example, but, the councillor has been involved in maybe at some point initiating a concern or whatever. And what I'm taking out of this is that maybe some consideration needs to be taken in terms, if we don't have a policy, then we need to get a policy.
and because this is where the wheels can potentially fall off. But the worst scenario, I think, if I was the counsellor in that situation, I would expect, at the very least, to get a concluding comment that yes, it's been addressed amicably or not, and this is the conclusion, or even to know in that process that it has been considered, it hasn't been lost in the depth of bureaucracy. But what I'm coming out of this is not to actually necessarily analyse that, it's helpful, is do we have a policy? Councillor Woodhead.
The policy has been that if there's some involvement like that at the start of the process, governors have no, and shouldn't have any interaction with the compliance process. Once it's concluded, and sometimes that's months and months, depending on at the extreme end of the scale, then they are advised of here's the conclusion and this is what happened. And that's fine. I don't believe it's good practice to update on the way through. It exposes, potentially puts at risk the process, and it puts the governor in a, can be a difficult position at times.
Yeah.
Interestingly, there's been a report just before Christmas released by the Office of the Auditor General, I think, Mr. Bodeker, on compliance processes in local government.
Yeah.
It was a little... It found a number of holes in the processes, and the headlines that came out were not that positive in some of the processes. When we, as the regional sector, dug into it, it turned out it was mainly a district and city council issue around the adequacy of the processes around compliance activity. But I'm sure there'll be some best practice guidelines in there as part of that we could refresh ourselves on at some point.
I suspect we do have some words here somewhere in some policy, but how would the councillor know in this instance that the mechanics of the process are sort of ticking over reasonably diligently as opposed to this is too hard parked?
Well, ask the director or the chief executive. Work in progress? Yes, work in progress.
It's not. Do we have a written policy?
No, we don't. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, my opinion was that reflected by the chair that once these matters were referred, there was a process to go through, and should a prosecution or an enforcement happen, that would be noted there to the level of detail that we advise councillors in a public forum. If Councillor Laws wishes to know the progress, I'm happy to discuss it with him. And, you know, in this case, it's one of those difficult neighbour versus neighbour, which has been going for many years. And we are continuing to investigate it, and there is some progress. So I'm happy to...
But I
want to write letters because they are discoverable, unless I'm advised to do so. And then how we write and what we write becomes a matter of, I want to take advice on that.
I mean, my instinct though is we've got new councillors, we'll always have new councillors, even the old councillors were scratching ahead. I would have thought we should have a policy. If we've got a policy, for goodness sake, it should be written down somewhere. Is that fair, Councillor Robinson?
Sounds reasonable.
How about I just ask that out of this, that maybe Mr. Bodeker, you know, has consideration to, you know, if there's a policy, where would it be written? Where should it be written? Councillor Kempton, and then Councillor Kempton. Thank you.
Look, I'm frustrated and grumpy today, so that's where I sit. Look, we're just deep in the pool of bloody bureaucracy. Quite frankly, I've never had a list of constituency inquiries that I've passed on that's so long that I needed an automatic process of being informed of where they've got to, right? Call somebody out and say, hey, how did that conclude? That's not too much of a problem to pick up the phone. Then you can choose the ones that are important, and you can decide you don't want to follow up the ones that aren't. And there's no reason why a councillor can't be proactive in that sense. More policies about what I consider to be my mutating just simply compound this bloody bureaucracy.
Okay, but process.
And but we take responsibility for following up.
Yeah, so I think you're agreeing with Councillor Wood, but nevertheless, if that's the way it is, then we could have that written down somewhere.
Well, write it down by all means, but just don't add more process.
Fair enough. Councillor Brown.
Yeah, look, this is a grey area, and we've had this discussion a number of times before. Yeah. I know I've had, you know, numerous complaints from constituents, which, you know, generally my rule is I always talk to either Mr. Bodecker or a director first up, that's the first port of call. But it is a grey area, and I don't know whether we can get some considerations. I think it's hard to make it, so it's a grey area, hard to make it black and white, but should something be added to the code of conduct, for example, about complaints from constituents? I think in a lot of ways I hear what Councillor Kempton says, that it will be pretty general, because every situation is different in a lot of ways. But you've just got to be so careful, because if you get, as a councillor, if you get too involved and it finishes up going to court, you could be it could make life very difficult for this councillor if a councillor gets rolled into court to give evidence.
Okay.
So just had to be very careful.
Thank you, Councillor Brown. But Mr. Bodecker, you're going to be given some consideration.
I'm happy to come back with a discussion paper, if that's the right word for it.
And maybe it's the code of conduct or
well, where it might sit, should the council approve it, is the easy bit.
Yeah.
What it says might be a bit challenge.
Now, believe it or not, we're in a regulatory biosecurity monitoring board here. And are you good, Councillor Laws?
No, I mean, I'd like, I don't like discussions that don't end with a resolution.
Okay.
And I'm concerned that Peter doesn't know, and neither do I still. I'd like to move then what you've just said, which is that the Chief Executive be asked for requesting and provide a paper to the next committee round on establishing effective council management communications regards constituent complaints.
Very good. I'm happy to second that. I'm going to, any discussion to that motion? Okay, I'm going to put that motion. Those for?
Aye.
Aye. Against?
Against.
One against? Carried. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for that motion, Councillor Board. Discussion, everybody. Moving on through water meters, pest management. So look, there it is. I've already summarised it. Any further discussion, the recommendation of the government will be noted. Do we have a mover of the recommendation?
Happy to do so, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Woodhead. Seconder. Councillor Hope. No further discussion. Those for?
Aye.
Aye. Against? Carried. Thank you. Right, next report. Interesting report. When are we having morning tea, Mr. Bodecker?
You may adjourn the meeting, I'm sure, for morning tea, Mr. Chairman.
When is the table time normally for morning tea?
10:30.
Yep.
There we go. I'd like to adjourn for morning tea. Thank you.